This week, scientists in Hawaii have made a discovery that could save the lives of North Queenslanders. They've identified a substance which acts as an anti-venom for the deadly box jellyfish. It's not a rare substance. It's not an expensive substance. In fact, it's been under our nose the whole time. It's zinc, which some of our older listeners will know has many healing properties. Chris Smith, hello there.
Good morning.
Now, this sounds simple, but the way zinc was identified here was complex. Tell us what happened.
Well, Angel Yanagihara and Ralph Shoei are two researchers at the University of Hawaii, and they have published in the journal PLOS ONE this week a new technique for extracting from the tentacles of members of the box family of jellyfish, because it's quite a big family. There's a number of members, including one that they study, which is the legendary Chironex fleckeri, which is the one which is found in North Queensland. They actually trimmed the tentacles off some of these specimens and extracted the nematocysts. These are like miniature hypodermic syringes that are preloaded with venom, which on contact with skin fire into the skin and deliver this deadly venom. So they were able to concentrate these nematocysts and then lyse them or break them open so that they release their deadly cargo. And they were doing this under controlled circumstances so they could produce very pure but very concentrated specimens of the venom that they were then able to study. And what they have found is that the venom contains a number of proteins which assemble into what are called porins. These are little pore-forming structures that ram holes into the walls of red blood cells, the cells that carry oxygen around our blood, and cause the cells to swell and then rupture. And when the cells do that, they release potassium into the bloodstream. And as anyone who works in medicine knows, potassium, which is normally kept safely locked away inside cells, can be deadly outside cells, because what it does is to affect the way that cells behave electrically, and especially the cells in the heart. And a big dose of potassium will stop the heart. And in tests subsequently on mice, they were able to show that as you administer this toxin, very quickly the heart stops beating, and it's down to the potassium, because they can show that this is changing very rapidly in response to the toxin. So then they said, is there any way to prevent this happening? And so they started to test some simple materials, just simple chemicals you would have lying around in your laboratory, and they tried zinc gluconate, which is a soluble form of zinc. And when they administered this to their test animals and also to cells in the dish, they found it very potently inactivates this venom structure. It obviously interferes with the way that the venom tries to assemble these protein pores, because the animals were living at least twice as long before they were getting heart problems compared with animals that were just given controlled substances. And that could make the difference between life and death for a person who's envenomated fatally with these jellyfish nematocysts. And the other point that they make is that actually when they compared the action of zinc against the action of traditional antivenom, which we give to people who get stung, it was actually better than the antivenom.
And we're talking
saving the lives of the mice.
And we're talking a soluble form of zinc. We're not talking about zinc cream.
No, you don't have to eat this or rub it on. This is zinc that you could inject quite safely. Uh-huh. It's in a preparation that you could give completely safely, and you could rig up an infusion of this, for example, to deactivate the venom proteins in the bloodstream. They also speculate, interestingly, at the end of the paper, that because it's so potent against the proteins in the venom, perhaps rubbing zinc cream onto the site of envenomation, where there may be undischarged nematocysts, effectively jellyfish stings that haven't gone off yet but will subsequently deploy toxin into the wound site, perhaps rubbing some zinc on there would also reduce the dose of toxin going into the person as well, which would further increase their chances of survival, certainly buy a lot of time before they could get to medical help. And if you can support them and control the potassium level while they're in the hospital, they have every chance of making a full recovery.
And Chris, I want to get to your pick for the science story of the year, but just briefly, some more science news this morning, a study that shows getting back to nature can boost your problem-solving powers.
Yes, Ruth Atchley, who's at the University of Kansas, has got a paper in PLOS ONE this week where she and her colleagues said there are these circuits in the brain which get tired by the stress of having to live with the trappings of modern life, the connectedness of modern technology, being assailed from all directions by tweets and Facebook pages and emails, which basically hijack your attention and thwart your ability to concentrate on things. So they said, what happens if we send someone out into the wilderness, divorced from any technology, and they have a hike and a get back to nature outbound trip for 4 days? So they took 56 people, two groups of them. One group did a test of attentional processing and deductive reasoning skills before they went on the hike. The other equivalent group did the same test after a 4-day hike. The results of the two tests, at least 50% better in the group who had gone back to nature for 4 days. So they're arguing that actually they're not clear whether it's just relaxing and experiencing nature, or whether it's the removal of the modern technology, or a combination probably of the two, that means that the brain restores some of its ability to concentrate via these frontal lobe circuits, which they dub the sort of default circuits which you need for quiet reflection.
It'd be good to dig down a little more into that, wouldn't it? And Chris, on our final show of this year, remind us now of one of your favourite science stories, the scientist who saved a 50,000-word article, not on a floppy disk, not on a computer hard drive, but inside DNA.
Yeah, this came out in the middle of August of this year, and it blew me away. I spoke to Sri Kasturi, who's the lead author on this paper. He's from Harvard. It was published in Science, and he and his colleagues wondered whether you could take 50,000 words of a book published on a web page, complete with pictures and even some JavaScript programming to make the web page work, and convert it into a DNA message, and then carry that DNA around in a test tube for a while, and then, using modern technology, read the DNA message back and produce a new web page again. So what they did was they wrote a little simple computer program that would convert the data on the web page into a binary sequence of noughts and ones. Then they had another program which said, well, if we've got noughts and ones, what we'll do is convert that into a DNA code. So we'll have two DNA letters, say A and C will be a 1 and G and T can be a 0. We'll then produce a series of short strands of DNA which have an address sequence in them and then some data. And we will produce this DNA from the book data. And they did that, and they ended up with a test tube of DNA, and they then fed it into a reading machine, which read all the sequences, and because each of them was associated with a little address, effectively a chapter marker, they could reassemble them back together, and they got the whole book back on their computer, and it read it faultlessly. And they point out that 1 gram of DNA can store 455 exabytes of data. That's about 455 times more data than the entire world produces in a year. So they're saying this is probably this sort of thing is the way that the world is going in terms of high-density data storage in the future.
Oh, and the future looks so different, doesn't it? Chris, thanks so much, and thank you for making science simple for us all this year. Really love having your company on the program. I want you to have a wonderful Christmas. It's minus 8 there in Cambridge at the moment, so you rug
it
up.
Certainly is.
Keep
I
warm.
Will too.
Have a gorgeous Christmas, and we'll see you next year. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Fran. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Chris Smith, our science correspondent. He's also a consultant for a virologist at Cambridge University. And as I said, minus 8 in Cambridge this morning. It's 16 to 7 on Breakfast.